Ladies and gentlemen, it's a very special occasion this evening at the London School of Economics because this is in fact the first public lecture in this lecture theatre. As you see, it's called the Hong Kong Theatre, which has nothing whatsoever to do with our subject this evening. It merely reflects it is a gift of the alumni of the school in Hong Kong. All of us in the school involved in the study of the European Union are delighted to welcome here this evening Alekos Michalidis, the Minister of Foreign Affairs of the Republic of Cyprus. He is speaking to us this evening on the Cyprus accession to the European Union, a vision and a challenge for today. The speech he is giving us is in many ways the keynote of a conference which is started this morning and continues tomorrow, which is covering many aspects, political, economic, international, of the problematic negotiations which will begin next year, the accession of Cyprus to the European Union. The minister brings with him very considerable expertise. He was a successful businessman, successful career in tourism before being tempted by the delights of politics. He was crowned a member of the Democratic Party, elected a member of the House of Representatives, and indeed Speaker of the House of Representatives from 1977 to 1987. He has been amongst the pioneers of moderate policies in the Republic of Cyprus and one of the thinkers behind the application to the European Union Convention. So it's a great pleasure and privilege to welcome you, Minister, to address us on the Cyprus accession to the European Union.
Honourable members of the Parliament, dear friends, first of all, let me thank the Professor for his very kind words. And I want to thank him for the great privilege of being the first speaker in this very fantastic room. I feel that it's truly a great honor for me being the key speaker in this seminar, an event which will have a lasting impact and impression on what we're trying to do, both regarding the future accession of Cyprus to the European Union, as well as our efforts for seeing an end to the 20-year-old problem. But also, because being here tonight in this room of the London School of Economics, a school that enjoys an extremely high reputation internationally, it's a great honor. It's also a great responsibility because I'm here tonight addressing you to present to you the dream, the vision of every Cypriot, of every political party for the future of Cyprus in the European Union. Trying to put our discussion in a broad perspective, I would like to stress that we have already entered in a new era, in an era where things are changing in a speeding up manner, in an accelerated manner. The end of the Cold War shifted our focus of attention. During that period, our focus of attention was fierce, dangers for massive destruction, wars, conflicts, and destruction. And all this has now shifted, and in this new period we are living in, the focus is no more on fears, but on prospects, on challenges, of how can we make the best of opportunities that are created or made for us. It seems to me that when the Iron Curtain came down, when the people felt free of the oppression and isolation, they rediscovered their freedoms, which they have been deprived for so many years. From that moment on, the people who lived in the areas of Central and Eastern Europe, their task was to change into a pluralistic society, to a market economy, to a society that respects and protects human rights, the rule of law. So we have entered a new era of change, great changes in Central and Eastern Europe. The prime mover and promoter of this change was the European Union. And it is for this reason that the European Union, that once was seen as a community of nations pursuing their common economic interests, the European Union became a leader in the whole of Europe, in the changes that were happening in Europe. So we are now living in a new era in Europe, where life is changing to a more democratic, a more prosperous, a more peaceful Europe, and that is the vision of every European, and that is the mission of the European Union. Cyprus shares fully this vision, because I think this vision takes us forward into the future, a better future for all. Now, the European Union did not limit its attention only to Central and Eastern Europe. It looked southward to the Mediterranean. Let me say that the Barcelona Conference was a milestone event, because the establishment of the Euro-Mediterranean starts a new era of cooperation, not merely on Europe, but all around the Mediterranean Sea. The partnership established by Euro-Mediterranean will open the venue for not only economic cooperation, but political cooperation, social, cultural cooperation, and therefore it is itself another great development in these recent years. Now, Cyprus again participated actively from the very first day of the establishment of the Euro-Mediterranean Partnership, because we believe in what is planned for the European, for this Euro-Mediterranean Partnership. And we felt that Cyprus and Malta, two countries that were closely associated with the European Union, and at the doorstep of commencing accession negotiations, we had more responsibilities than the rest of the countries in the Mediterranean outside the European Union. Now, one very important move was the realization by the European Union that integration was important, but with the development of the political landscape in Europe, it was very vital that the doors for enlargement would be opened, because the invitation to the 12 countries as future members of the Union was giving a target for these countries and was opening a challenge for them, challenge for the necessary changes within, but also sharing the common dream for peace, stability, and prosperity in the whole of Europe. It is within this context that we must see Cyprus, an island that has been suffering for the last 22 years, the prospects, the opportunities, and the challenges. Let me first begin by giving an outline of the historical relations of Cyprus with the European Union. I would like to subdivide them into three phases. Phase one is between 72 and 87. Phase two is between 88 to 92. And the third phase is 93 to probably year 2000. Now, in 72, Cyprus signed the association agreement, and it was a development that was that became necessary the moment the European Union, the moment Britain decided to join the European Community. The Commonwealth special tariffs, preferential tariffs, were dismantled, and Cyprus faced the need to establish new trade relations to be able to continue trading, again primarily with Britain, but also opening up possibilities with the rest of Europe. The agreement of 72 was going to come into two sections, each one five-year durations. So 78, we were due to sign the second agreement that was leading, was going to the bridge leading to the customs union. Unfortunately, 2 years later, we had the invasion, which was a great shock on our economy. We have lost something like 70% of our economic resources, and we faced an enormous social problem because we had to care for one-third of our population, about 200,000 refugees who became homeless from one day to another. At the same time, there was some reservation on behalf of the members of the then European Community regarding entering to the second agreement. So what we experienced from 77 onward was an annual extension of the previous agreement, which was really very tough on us because it is very difficult to be operating your economy and especially your trading without knowing what's going to happen 2 years from now, because the extension was only for 1 year. So we reached, that's how we finished the first phase, and then by 87 we entered phase two by the signing of the protocol, which is leading to customs union. That is a major step forward because it opened great possibilities for increasing our exports. Of course, the main trading partner of Cyprus is the European Union. It's significant to note that 59% of our exports are going to the European Union and about 59% are imports from the European Union. So most of our trading is done with the European Union. Another thing which is very important regarding this agreement was also the financial protocols that created new possibilities for financing major projects, some of them, especially one like the Nicosia sewerage system, which was of bicommunal interest. So the agreement signed in 87 and the implementation of it starting in 88 opened a wide venue of economic cooperation with the European Union and brought us much closer to the European Union practices. We now enter in 1990, Cyprus submitted its application, and immediately thereafter, the Commission sent the experts to Cyprus to prepare the ABIC. From then on, there was a period of about 3 years when nothing was moving. So we entered the third phase, which is the beginning of 93 onward. And this is a time when President Kleridis was elected as President of Cyprus. So from this moment on, we have more familiarity with what developed because we were part of all these developments. And I must say the developments from 1993 onward were very rapid developments because during that period, we had milestone decisions which brought Cyprus for the first time very close on the accession path to the European Union. Let me say that this was not a matter of accident, it was a result of specific policy which we declared from day one when Glafkos Kliridis became president of Cyprus. I would like to give you an extract. from the speech President Karidis made to the House of Commons, the Parliament, our Parliament, on the day of his investiture as President. He said, among others, "We shall give priority to actions which aim at promoting the accession of Cyprus to the European Union. We shall undertake every effort to persuade the European Union that progress in Cyprus' accession assists in the efforts to solve the Cyprus problem. If Europe wishes to solve the Cyprus problem, it should help by expressing its readiness to accept us as a member." 2 days later, I had the privilege of being appointed as foreign minister in President Greece's government. And on the day, on the ceremony of taking over the ministry, I made a statement which I'll give you a quotation of it. "The axis of our foreign policy," that is, we're talking about beginning of 93, "the axis of our foreign policy is what we call the European orientation. By this, we not only mean our obligation for accession to the European Union and the harmonization of the structures existing in Cyprus with those of Europe in order to become a full member of the European Union, but also the activation of the European factor in the efforts to find a solution to the Cyprus problem." I had two reasons for giving you these quotations, which we statements we made from day one. We assume our responsibilities as government. First of all, to underline that the focus of our foreign policy was the future accession of Cyprus to the European Union. But second, and equally important, is that we considered from day one that this would have been a venue that might facilitate our efforts of finding a solution to the Cyprus problem. From the very beginning, when we declared our European orientation policy, at the same time, we stressed that this could become a venue for facilitating a solution to the Cyprus problem. As all foreign ministers, unfortunately, we are travelers. So the first a few days after I assumed office, I started thinking where was going to be my first trip abroad. And I decided that the first trip visit would be Brussels. So I went to Brussels and I had a long meeting with Commissioner Van den Broek and tried to explain to him our foreign policy, our aims, our efforts. I could then realize, understand, and which was a few days after I became foreign minister, the concerns in the European Union. And their concerns was not regarding our economic structures, state of our economy, legal structures and others, but their concerns were regarding the continuation of the Cyprus problem. I realized that what stopped them was the Cyprus problem. That was my first realization after talking to Mr. Van den Broek. Now, following that discussion, I presented our point of view, a point of view that I then explained to all foreign ministers I met thereafter. And our position was the following. We have to, if the European Union is concerned about the continuation of the Cyprus problem, they should study and find and establish the elements, the factors that caused the stalemate in the Cyprus problem. Our position was that Turkey insisted on maintaining the status quo, even though everybody declared it unacceptable. And therefore, it would be unreasonable that Cyprus, being the victim of aggression and continued occupation, we would be punished because Turkey wanted to continue its presence on the island. I also pointed out the following. There may be concerns as to what happens at the end of the line, at the conclusion of accession negotiations. But can we not see that the very beginning of the process itself might be helpful for finding a solution to a Cyprus problem. And therefore, whatever concerns, one should put them aside, start the process and wait to the end of the line. We cannot stop any country, and we have never asked any country to commit themselves as to how they will vote when the accession negotiations are concluded. After all, any questions now about the existence of the problem may be relevant because hopefully the problem may be solved. But even if it's not solved, it's their prerogative to decide at that moment which way they go, whether they say yes or no for Cyprus accession. Therefore, I emphasize at the meeting that it was of paramount importance, since the European Union was concerned about the continuation of the problem, that the process would start, give it a chance to play its own role in helping us find a solution to the Cyprus problem, but at the same time, it was an open invitation to all members of the European Union and the European Union itself to play its role and help in finding an end to a problem that was bothering the Europeans. Following that meeting, I went around to every capital in the European Union. I must tell you, about 6 months ago, I was addressing our parliament, and in trying to get some information, I asked the director of my office to check how many visits I did to European capitals. He gave me the number 87. In 3 years, I paid 87 visits to European capitals. In all these meetings, we tried to project this same argument, the same views, trying to underline that the commencement of the process would be a catalyst for a solution of the Cyprus problem. The opinion was issued on June 30th, 1993, and from then on things started moving very fast, one event after the other. So June, the opinion was issued. The opinion clearly said that Cyprus is eligible for accession. October of the same year, the Council endorsed the opinion and had asked the Commission to embark on substantive talks with the government of Cyprus with a view to preparing, and help us prepare for the accession negotiations. It was a very important decision for us because from that moment on, we have been sending a lot of our people from different sectors to familiarize themselves with the economy there. Also, it was important that a little later, December, the Council decided to appoint Serge Abou, who was the speaker today, as the European observer, and to observe what was happening regarding the Cyprus problem and come back and report to the Council, because the Council had decided that it would re-examine the application by the beginning of 1995. Then we moved on to the Corfu Council, followed by the Essen Council, in which it was decided that Cyprus and Malta will be involved on the next enlargement. And the final and the most important decision, which is a milestone decision, was the March 6th decision, which said that accession negotiations with Cyprus will commence 6 months after the end of the IGC. The ministers regretted the lack of progress in the intercommunal talks and called for increased efforts to achieve a comprehensive settlement in accordance with the UN Security Council resolutions. Third, the ministers considered Cyprus' accession to the European Union should bring increased security and prosperity on the island. And finally, the ministers called on the Commission to organize, in consultation with the Cyprus government, the requisite contacts with the Turkish Cypriot community for the purpose of making perceive more clearly the advantages of European Union accession. Three European councils that followed, the one in Cannes, the other in Madrid, and the latest in Florence, reconfirmed that decision of March 6th. I must say that this decision was very important. It was really a milestone because from that moment on, all our outlook towards Europe changed completely. First of all, we embarked on the structured dialogue, which gave us a unique opportunity for being closely acquainted with specific problems and special issues of special interest to the European Union or member states. Secondly, we became more familiar with the acquis, and we felt very strongly that we already embarked on a mission on the accession process. Now, at this moment, I would like to address two aspects of the whole issue. The one aspect is that of harmonization, and the other aspect is how this decision, how this process can expedite a solution to the Cyprus problem. Now, regarding harmonization, let me say that we are proud of the condition of our economy. I'm not saying that we sit back and do nothing. The economy is built after the ruins of 74, and therefore we know that if you want to build an economy, you want to work hard. Cyprus has one very important resource, the people who work very hard and work very hard to build on the ruins of 1974 invasion. Let me tell you that the indicators of our economy are quite encouraging. In fact, we meet the Maastricht Treaty convergence criteria. I will give you some numbers. The rate of growth of 96 is around 2.5%, and 97 is estimated to be around 3.5 to 4%. The inflation rate is around 3%. The unemployment is around 2.8%. The government budget deficit stood at 2.9% of the gross domestic product. The public debt is at 54% of the gross domestic product. The Cyprus pound has shown remarkable stability and has been linked since 92 without any problems to the narrow band of 2.25% of the exchange rate mechanism. And this is the description, the indicators of our economy, which show clearly that we are not only ready, as far as the economy is concerned, to join the European Union, but we are also in a position to proceed to the third stage of economic and monetary union. Now, regarding harmonization, the moment the Maastricht decision was taken, we considered it as an invitation, but also as a challenge, an invitation to move closer to the European Union by starting accession negotiations, but also as a challenge because we had to prepare ourselves for these negotiations. We never thought that the decision of Maastricht was a free ticket to enter the European Union, but was an invitation to be ready to enter the European Union. So we embarked immediately on the harmonization process. We established 22 working groups. And for 1 year, they were back and forth to Brussels, and they were acquainted fully and in great detail with the acquis in the sector that they were representing. They submitted reports, each one of them their report, as to what was the gap between what existed in Cyprus and the acquis. That report was presented to the Special Ministerial Committee on European Affairs. Then we asked them to present another report giving a time schedule and stating the necessary policy decisions that needed to be taken for implementing that time schedule. And that has been done. And so from now on, every 6 months, they will be reporting back to the committee, ministerial committee, as to the progress for the implementation. I'm saying this to assure you that we are taking the harmonization very seriously. Our target is that by the time we embark on accession negotiations, We should have concluded about 70-80% of the harmonization. And we are now itemizing very few elements that could stay after accession. Now, the reason we're doing all this, as I said, is because we don't want to be a burden. We want to be ready to start accession negotiations and ensure that the negotiations would be smooth and hopefully brief. Now, let me also say that the same approach to harmonization applied to the question of foreign policy and security policy. In August 1994, long before the decision of Maastricht was taken, we declared that we are moving to align our foreign policy with that of the European Union. We have established a channel of communication, and now we are continuously aligning ourselves with demarches, declarations of the European Union, and so on. Let me give you some numbers, because numbers always measure the results and not words describe them. So, during the 48th session of the General Assembly, our voting pattern was in line with that of the European Union, up to 66%, the 48th session, 66. 49th session, we went up to 71, and at the 50th session, we've gone up to 89%. So again, a serious engagement. When we declared we're going to align with foreign policy, we were doing it. As regards the question of security, we have established contacts with the Western European Union, and we are glad that the ministerial meeting of the Western European Union in May 1995 decided to establish a dialogue with Cyprus. Now, talking about the foreign policy, I want to open a parenthesis here that we made it an important element of our foreign policy to establish close relations with our neighbors. I'm talking about the Middle Eastern countries. We have now excellent relations with both Israel as well as the Arab countries. And this we did because we recognized something that Shimon Peres told me once: you cannot change geography. We are there, and we have to talk to our neighbors and make them our friends. And we all hope and pray that there will be a final solution to the Middle East problem, in which case the whole area of the Middle East will be an area of economic development and cooperation. And Cyprus wishes to be part of, play a role, and more so, Cyprus aspires to be the bridge of the European Union to the Middle East. Now, let us turn on the other component of our task, which is using this accession process as a method for achieving a lasting solution to a Cyprus problem. I want to be as clear, as firm as possible that our dream is to become a member of the European Union, but our desperate wish, our agony, is to see an end to the Cyprus problem. There is no mix-up, there is no question of trying to redirect our attention from the existence of the problem to something else. We are delighted that the prospects for the European Union are open, but we'll never forget that our main task is a solution to the Cyprus problem, because that is the guarantee for the future. If we don't have a future, we cannot look for prosperity and all other things. So that is vital for us. Let me say also something else. That I recall when I was at talks, meetings with the then Foreign Minister of France and now Prime Minister, Mr. Alain Juppé, during the French presidency. And when I was pressing for a date for accession negotiations, he explained to me that there was already a decision that there would be no accession negotiations prior to the end of the IGC. And when I said, well, let's make it after the end of the IGC, he wondered why I wanted a date that for something to happen 2 to 3 years later. I emphasized then, I want to repeat now, we wanted date for accession negotiations. We wanted a clear signal because we felt that that would create a new dynamism, a new momentum in efforts for solving the Cyprus problem. The only reason we tried so hard to get this day is precisely because we thought it was create a new element in the efforts of finding a Cyprus problem, a solution to the Cyprus problem, knowing that during the 22 years, so many initiatives started and all had the same result, total failure. So we wanted to bring another component, another element into it. Of course, the question of accession and the commencement of accession negotiations, let me say that our aspiration is not simply that we join the European Union. We want all the people of Cyprus to be in when we join the European Union. You know, we emphasize to all, we came with statements saying that, expressing concerns as to what happens if, when the negotiations are concluded, that there is no solution to the Cyprus problem. And I said, why wait for then? Let's do it now. The idea, the perfect time for a solution of the Cyprus problem is during the interim time before we start accession negotiations. We've got more than a year, about a year and a half before we start accession negotiations. We're talking about a problem that we've been dealing with it for 22 years. There are no secrets. Everything is known, positions are known. What is needed now is the goodwill to come to an agreement, to reach a solution on the Cyprus problem. Now is the time for a solution of the Cyprus problem. Why? Because an agreement now, before we embark on negotiations, we'll know for sure what it will include, and that what will include will not be an obstacle later when we start accession negotiations. Imagine if somewhere after we come to an agreement, the agreement is after the negotiations, after accession, and we find that what we agree is not in line with the acquis. What do? Do we reopen the Cyprus problem? So the timing is now. Second, which is equally important, when we come to the agreement, to a solution of the Cyprus problem, hopefully, as I said before, we embark on negotiations, the first move after the agreement on the Cyprus problem will be to embark on the bigger mission, start accession negotiations. Therefore, the message sent to the people of Cyprus, Greek Cypriots and Turkish Cypriots, is that yes, we've finished with the Cyprus problem, but we are now embarking on a grander mission, which is take Cyprus and place it as an equal partner in the European Union. So all this, both in contents and in symbolism, and if you like, psychologically, compels us to make the best use of the interim time before accession negotiations start for a solution to the Cyprus problem. Of course, to have a solution of a problem that divides to people or to parties, both must want the solution. There may be differences of elements in the solution, but if the one party does not want the solution, you are not going to be very successful. And may I say that our biggest problem in all these 22 years is that unfortunately Turkey has always been totally negative on any prospects for a solution of the Cyprus problem. It's one thing what they are saying publicly for reasons of appearances, but it's another thing what they are doing when we come to the moment of pursuing a solution to a Cyprus problem. We must say this, and we have to distinguish it between the usual reference to the Turkish Cypriots. You know, we've been the victims of aggression. We've suffered a lot. We've seen our homes taken by settlers. We've seen our churches turned into coffee shops and what have you. We've one third of our population become refugees. But while describing all this, I tell you, the Turkish Cypriot community have been an even greater victim. And God is of great concern to us now at this very moment. It's the very fact that there is a dangerous trend for demographic change in the occupied part of the island. We have a massive influx of settlers from Anatolia, people of a different culture, people of a different lifestyle, if you like, people who are not Cypriots. And at the same time, we see a massive exodus of Turkish Cypriots. I don't know how many Turkish Cypriots are in London. I'm sure there are plenty. There will be plenty in Canada and plenty in Australia. But if this proceeds further, the moment may come when the whole notion of a solution, which is bringing the two communities together, living together, will not be meaningful, because we'll be looking for a Turkish Cypriot community and it will not be there. I want to stress this as much as I can. Those who are worried as to what happens if at the end of the accession process the Cyprus problem is not solved, they should focus their attention on something else. That's not the worry. The worry is that by that time, which may be around the year 2000, I don't know how many Turkish Cypriots will be in the northern parts of Cyprus and how many Turks from Turkey will be there. So we are moving, we are entering rather dangerous grounds, and time is of essence. Now, let me say that there are a plethora of statements by many regarding these concerns as to what happens if the problem is not solved. And of course, while stating this, they're stating publicly that the difficulties for accession if the problem is not solved. Well, I do not want to question the goodwill, the good intention of those who are making these statements, because they are throughout Europe. I know they are doing this because they are concerned, really concerned with the existence of this Cyprus problem. But what I'm trying to do is to highlight and stress that such statements, unfortunately, are not helpful. A, as I said, we have not asked any member of the European Union to tell us how they will vote at the end. That is their unquestionable prerogative. Two, which is important, is that by making these statements, they must be sending signals either to us or to the Turkish side. If it's to us, and they tell us that if the problem is not solved, then it will be very difficult from a smaller country, I won't give the name, they even said it will be impossible to join the European Union. If that message is sent to us, we are surprised. Have we not convinced our friends in Europe that we are desperate for a solution of the Cyprus problem? But if we are not, if we don't want a solution, why are we appealing to everybody to be engaged? But in the last 3 years that we've been government, we've been up and down to the United States, to London, to Brussels, to Bonn, to Paris, begging, requesting everybody to be actively engaged in efforts to solve the problem. We underline that any engagement must be concerted, because if too many people are going their own way, then we may not be getting the right result. But we try to encourage countries and the European Union to be engaged on the Cyprus problem. If we had any reservation for solving the problem, why are we inviting them? Are we asking for trouble? As I said, yes, we hope to become members of the Union, but we are desperate to see an end to the Cyprus problem. Therefore, any such warning to us or advice to us is totally unnecessary. If during the process, those who would be involved in trying to find a solution see that we are negative, we are difficult, we are avoiding a solution, please punish us. But don't rush in making statements that may be giving the wrong kind of message. Secondly, is the signal sent to Turkey? Well, a signal is how one interprets it. If Turkey, who is against our accession to the European Union, and it's against the solution, receives the message that if there is no solution, then we are not going to be allowed to go in, then I'm afraid we have given another good reason to Turkey to try to block a solution. When the Council was drafting the decision of R6, we expect everybody to be very careful and cautious about the wording that was used, because the clarity of the signals are the only elements that can turn this process into a catalyst for a solution of the Cyprus problem. I want to repeat, I'm not suggesting that those who are making these statements is because they want to block a solution. I think that would be totally unfair to say, or they would like to block us for accession. No, but I'm just passing our assessment, our position, that we don't need encouragement. And any such signals are misread, misinterpreted by Turkey, and therefore may become an incentive for them to become tougher and more difficult at efforts to solve the Cyprus problem. Now, at the decision of March 6, there was reference to the question of trying to inform the Turkish Cypriot community about the benefits from accession. I think it's a very good idea. And there were ideas presented by many countries, by some countries, definitely Britain has had some initiatives in this direction, and the Commission is doing a great job in this direction, trying to inform the Turkish Cypriots about the benefits. And it's important to tell them that it's unfair, it's wrong, that the present disparity, economic disparity, should stay on forever. There are the possibilities when we join the European Union that all that should be, that gap should be bridged as speedily as possible. But of course, this information must be given to the Turkish Cypriot community, and we encourage seminars, discussions, exchanges. On sectoral basis, if you like, whether you are talking to farmers, whether we are talking to business people or other sectors, but also, why not, exchanges among political parties, exchanging ideas, so that we both face the new challenges when we join the European Union. I mean, the benefits of accession is not a secret, and they must be available to the Turkish Cypriot community so that they know the great prospects that lie ahead when we join the European Union. While we're saying this, we want to note two things. Point one, this has to be sent by people who are experts, whose messages are on the issue. They don't carry political message, and therefore they are not loaded messages, but clear, technical, substantive messages. At the same time, any effort of trying to appease Mr. Dektash and say let's have some contact with Mr. Dektash or organs of his illegal regime, it's completely outside the spirit of the decision of March 6, but they are also giving their own messages, because it's like telling Mr. Dektash, wait a little bit longer and eventually you will be recognized. So we wholeheartedly support every effort which is aimed at giving full knowledge to the European, to the Turkish Cypriot community, whether it's in total, whether it's in sectors, whether it's on business level, whether it's on political level, talking about political parties. Now, I want to allow time for questions. I want, therefore, I will interrupt here, and I will finish my presentation by repeating an appeal we may be making in the last 3 years. And I must say, we are very glad that of recent there are positive, encouraging responses. We encourage engagement, direct engagement, active engagement of those who can to help us find an end to the Cyprus problem. We are delighted because Britain is actively engaged now We are very happy that Britain, the British government, has decided to appoint Sir David Haney as a special envoy, a person of long experience, who is now actively engaged on the issue. We are happy that President Clinton has appointed an envoy. We are happy because the presidency is appointed a representative in doing whatever they can do. We welcome every effort and every gesture. Now is the time to do our best for bringing an end to the Cyprus problem. I want to conclude by saying this. We want a free Cyprus. We want a peaceful Cyprus, a prosperous Cyprus, a united Cyprus, where the prosperity and peace will be for all the people of Cyprus, regardless of whether they are Greek Cypriots or Turk Cypriots. That Cyprus we would wish and aspire to see as a member of the European Union. We will not allow anybody to veto our ambition to join the Union, but our real ambition is to see a united Cyprus become a member of the European Union. This is our vision, this is our goal, and this is our dream. Thank you.
Questions. Could I ask people wishing to pose a question, first of all, pose a question rather than open negotiations, and secondly, to identify themselves, please. Please.
Perhaps to the formalize things, to what extent does the electoral victory of the Socialist Party in Malta influence the Cyprus application to the European Union?
Well, first of all, what is the policy of Malta is the task of the government of Malta and not us. There were messages because of the pre-election campaigns that perhaps Malta might withdraw its interest from accession. There were some encouraging statements which I saw in the London Times, saying that the government wished to go beyond the association agreement and so on. Therefore, I cannot comment beyond it, except to say that we have very close ties with Malta. We started on this venue, we would aspire to finish. Now, if Malta decides to stop, to withdraw its application, would that affect us? The answer is no, for the following reason. Well, we started together, with the decisions of October 93, with the question of substantive talks, we went to the COFU and Essen councils, we went to the March 6th decision for us, Malta 1 month later. I'm not saying that we are running faster, I'm just giving the facts to you. But after the Florence European Council, the message is clear. The reference is that negotiations will start not only with Cyprus and Malta 6 months after, but it's open for the rest. And each country is going its own way, and how fast one is going, it depends how ready one is going through the accession process. Therefore, it is irrelevant as far as Cyprus is concerned whether Malta or any other country will decide to withdraw its application or not. I hope they don't, but it's there. Their right to decide for their own future, but it will not in any way affect our process. Our process will be affected by how ready we are when we embark on accession negotiation. The same applies to the other 11 countries.
Nikos Avramopoulos from Greece, an ordinary thank you very much. What is happening with the suggestion of the reflection group, where it was asked the inclusion in the objectives of the common foreign and security. process of the Union and its member states along the inclusion of the mutual assistance clause and the principle of the inviolability of the borders of the member states and the guarantee of territorial integrity supported with all the power and force of NATO and the defense forces, which I think, I'm sure you appreciate, that's important.
It will be very relevant to us because our problem is not merely finding a solution to the present conditions of Cyprus, but our task would be to ensure that we live in conditions of peace and stability, you know, for eternity, if you like. Not. It seems to me that, as I said earlier on, and I'm not the right person to speak of as to what the European Union is going to do. I mean, that's part. If there is a foreign minister from a member of the European Union, would be more competent to respond. But it seems to me, as I said, as an interested party, as a prospective member, that whereas up to a time, moment, the preoccupation was all economic integration, cooperation, it's realized more and more that the question of common foreign policy and common security policy is they are vital. And I do believe that for the European Union to play its great role as the leader in Europe, they've got to expand and go deeper in the area of pursuing common foreign policy and common on security. What arrangements they will do, I don't know. But for me, security means respecting borders, sovereignties, territorial integrity of countries. That must be a general and common commitment.
My name is Sophia Teofilou. I know you're sort of desperate that Cyprus has joined the EU, but what I'm worried about is how desperate are you? If the EU says one of your conditions is that you have to give a percentage of Cyprus to the Turkish Cypriots, would you sign an agreement just to join the EU for peace?
We have invited the European Union and we have, in our contacts with member states, we have encouraged a concerted effort. We did suggest, and we do believe, that the engagement in this whole process of the Commission is also very important because there are people with a lot of knowledge and commitment. So if the European Union has ideas about the solution of the Cyprus problem, we invite it to join us in trying to find that solution. I know that the basic criterion of any solution, it must be that it fits with the acquis communautaire. And therefore, if a solution is in line with the acquis, I know that it respects human rights, the rule of law, and so on and so forth. Therefore, I don't think the European Union will come and say, you know, give so much land and then you come in. Are we talking about a divided island coming in or a united island coming in? If the European Union does want, and we hope it does, to help, then we encourage them to come in and we listen to their suggestions because we know that whatever we agree, as I said, it has to be in line with their key and they are the best to tell us.
Cyprus as a prospective member and Greece as a current member
prospective Turkey membership of the EU?
Well, I cannot speak on behalf of Greece, but the position of Greece, as I understand it, is a respect of the territory integrity of the island, of the country. It's not a question of policy how to fight Turkey, but how Turkey will respect the international recognized borders and the territory integrity of Greece and, of course, any other country. So I don't think that Greece is out to damage Turkey. It's out to tell Turkey that we are neighbors, but the first thing we have to do is to respect each other. And respecting each other means respecting our territorial integrity and sovereignty. Now, regarding us, how can we exercise a veto for Turkey if we are not members of the Union? Let's be open. Is Cyprus be a potential block for Turkey to join the European Union? I don't think so. I think there may be other countries that have reservations, and if Turkey would like to pursue it, it's best if they go around and talk to the various countries. Our position is not how to block Turkey from joining the European Union. It's not how to tell countries stop cooperating with Turkey and so on. That's not our position. Our position is that we respect the rights of every country. We respect the rights of the people of the countries to look after their economic interests or their political interests and so on, but we should not be asked to pay for it. Now, you said the Cyprus problem is not very important for Turkey. Well, you know, for a long time we were saying, and we repeat, that if Turkey is considered to be an important partner or ally or whatever you call it, the first thing you want to do is ask yourself, how can I help a country that is I consider it important? Well, there is one way that was tried, and it was not a wise idea. Accommodate everything Turkey did. It's not a credit to now recognize that the conditions in Turkey, as far as democratic rule, are very poor, that the conditions of human rights are terrible. So it seems to me that there must be an evaluation of the situation. Not saying that I cross out Turkey, but saying, how can I help Turkey? The way to help Turkey is to say, fine, I'm going to help you financially, I'm going to do this, but at the same time, you must do this and that, so that Turkey gradually comes closer to Europe, not for money, not for trading only, but also for adopting the values and principles for which Europe stands. Because if they don't move closer, but only they come for trading agreements, I don't think that will be in the long run in the interest of Turkey. And after all, what is the result of all the efforts up until now? Turkey is shifting more and more to the east. Therefore, we believe that Turkey must be asked to do certain things which is, in the long run, it's in its own interest and insist on them. Question of Cyprus. Well, there are two or three things that are important. There is a question of expansionist policies that Turkey has, not only on Cyprus, but on the Aegean too. There is the occupation of Cyprus. There is the massive violations of human rights in Turkey itself. So Turkey has to perform. Can you say that Turkey is a good partner, but it's okay if Turkey is occupying an island like Cyprus? You see, even the very fact that the Cyprus problem still persists, one has to, let's put aside the question of future accession. Cyprus is a European country. It's been stated so in the AVI. Perhaps Serge Abou is responsible for that. But it's been confirmed. Cyprus is eligible for accession because it's a European country. If the European Union is interested for peace, stability and prosperity, are they not interested that one of the European countries is under occupation, regardless of whether we join or not join? So I think what is needed is a more constructive approach, having the long-range perspective rather short term, because short term has been tried, it has been a process of accommodation. It has not helped Turkey. The results in Turkey now is ample proof.
It has been presented that European Union membership is some kind of lubricant to find, so some kind of framework within which negotiations can take place. And the issue here is, which I would like to refer to, the issue of sovereignty. The argument goes, in European countries, all the countries are sharing their sovereignty. To what extent, therefore, the question is, and this is something directed to you, would the Cyprus government be willing to make concessions on the issue of sovereignty to Mr. Tektash as a part of a package agreement? This package agreement would include, leading up to the previous question, questions to do with territorial matters, questions to do with guarantees, and question wider constitutional issues, as well as accommodating their strategic needs to Turkey. But can you kind of address the point of sovereignty and the extent to which
Well, it's not difficult to reply what is our position on sovereignty. We've declared it so many times. First of all, let me say that as far as we're concerned, the solution of the Cyprus problem is on the basis of as prescribed by the resolutions of the Security Council. And I want to refer you to resolution 936. Which states specifically that it must be a country with single sovereignty, single international personality, and so on and so forth. While responding to your question, I don't want to encourage anybody to ask me further, because if we start itemizing all elements of discussion and you want me to respond, David will decide to give up his efforts for a solution of the Cyprus problem. So, that's an easy answer, but it's not, I don't think it's constructive to start saying what our position is on each item. What I would like to stress, however, is that our highest priority is the question of security. We have no problem in saying this. And when we say security, we mean an answer to the concerns, security concerns that we, as Greek Cypriots, have, but the security concerns that the Turkish Cypriots have. And the way we look at it is, let's go for maximum security, let's not compromise on security. We would like to come to an arrangement on the security issue that we can go home and say, I feel happy, relaxed, and safe. And the same in Turkish Cypriots should say that. So the question of security is the top priority issue. I won't go into more details, I don't want to go into more other aspects, because I don't think it would be very constructive. Now, regarding the message you were saying, our position was that the decision of March 6 for commencing accession negotiations was putting Turkey on a dilemma. And Turkey is facing a dilemma. It reacted so provocatively at the beginning. They never stop commenting, it's the only matter they are discussing, they are making statements on. Either they continue their policy of no blocking a solution, which means they will deprive the Turkish Cypriots from sharing the benefits, which is not our choice, or they compromise, they allow a solution to take place, in which case the whole of Cyprus, all the people of Cyprus, will share the benefits of accession and will be together at every stage and at every moment.
I think one final question.
Okay.
My name is Erdogan Sturek from the SC. Turkey is an ally of the United States for NATO defense agreement with Syria, which is internationally recognized for supporting terrorist training camps. This is not
please say it. I couldn't hear.
Right. From NSC. If Turkey is an ally, then why does Greece form a NATO defense agreement with Syria, which is internationally recognized for supporting terrorist training camps? This is not a move towards a friendly dialogue.
The question is referring to what we signed, I'll answer. Your question was not addressed to me because it's nothing that has to do with Cyprus. Is it something that Cyprus government did? You are talking about an agreement between?
So you are referring, if you want to refer to Turkey, then the southern Cyprus should be referred to Greece.
The Turkish Cyprus should be referring to Greece?
Well, they are both have the same interests. So if you were to refer to Greece, refer to Turkey, then Greece should be referred to as well.
But I'm not commenting on what agreement Turkey has with any country, that's their business, not ours. And what agreements Greece has with anybody, whether it's an agreement with Syria, whether it's an agreement, I don't even know whether there's an agreement with Syria. I do know there was some agreement with Israel, but I mean, it's not for me to comment. And I won't comment if you ask me whether Erdogan was wise going to Libya or not, or going to anywhere else. It's not my business. I'm a foreign minister of Cyprus.
And I think you've proved this very eloquently. May I say that I'm very pleased that the minister has agreed to stay with us for a drink, which will take place in the senior dining room that's on the fifth floor of our old building, which is in Houghton Street, the Houghton Street entrance. And I invite you all to join us and to continue some of these discussions. May I just repeat the thanks which we've all, I think, felt to you. First of all, for setting such a high standard of exposition in this new lecture theatre at the London School of Economics. We will have a lot to live up to in the lecturers who follow you here. By our questions and our applause, we have shown our great appreciation of the important and stimulating ideas you have shared with us. So let me say once again, thank you very much.